Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, bringing you tick from high altitude. And we look forward to you joining us in September. And Mile High 2021 is going to be very exciting to be in community. And one thing I'm going to ask you to please do is hit subscribe. Whatever channel you are watching this or listening to this on, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher, and make sure you catch all Mile High Tick. Today, I am super thrilled to be with one of my favorite people in chiropractic, one of the people that I really have grown a lot of warmth and affection for, and admiration and respect, and so grateful and honored to spend this time with her, and that she'll be joining us a mile as well. Dr. Tamara McIntyre. She at some point served as a clinical and clinical education coordinator at some chiropractic college somewhere near California in the U.S., and she's really passionate about people practicing exactly as they imagined, which is a part, which really what one of the reasons why I think her and I connect, because that's how what I see for people too. And I want people to see practice and chiropractic as they envision it to be, not as it has been showing up. And I know her mission is for chiropractic to show up more authentic to its principles and foundation. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Tamara.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Danny. I'm so excited to be here today.
We're grateful to see you. It looks like you have different scenery than the last time I connected with you.
You absolutely do. It looks like a fake backdrop. But yeah, I'm in Costa Rica right now, so no longer on Vancouver Island.
Cool. And how are things in Costa Rica?
Brilliant. It's, I sort of feel like I'm a little bit in a bubble. So changing jurisdictions at this time globally has made a huge difference in my own just mental health for sure.
Good. Wonderful. Well, it's been an interesting time for all of us to adapt to and to optimize through. And so what are some things that you've seen? Because we might as well just jump right into this. In the last 18 months of the world, what are some things that you've seen chiropractors, chiropractic students have brought to you as what they've been going through or experiencing this through?
I mean, a number of different things. For the friends of mine that is still in private practice, and for those individuals that kind of landed on our radar, you know, Dr. Mo and I started the Prana Foundation like literally months before the world shut down. And the foundation really is principally an online community with online programs. And so, you know, we had the infrastructure at the exact time when I think chiropractors and chiropractic students needed support the most. And so, you know, initially it was the idea that this was a short-term situation. And now, you know, 18 months later, we're dealing with stress without an end in sight. And as human beings, we're not entirely built to sustain that kind of longstanding stress. And so, you know, what I'm seeing is people ready to make some changes in their life. It's certainly, you know, where we were and how we landed and how this actually impacted us has, you know, really brought to light for a lot of people, changes that maybe they had intended on making or thought about making, but had not done it. And then then there's the new graduates who, you know, were either in associateships or looking for a place to practice, that ultimately the landscape of practice changed. So, you know, that brought to light, as you can imagine, I can't imagine graduating right now with a whole new environment to walk into. And so, you know, it's that level of instability that created opportunity. And some have chosen to, you know, sort of create some clarity for themselves associated with, you know, what direction they're going to take. And others just are really struggling knowing they need to make some changes and need some level of support. So, you know, our foundational initiatives really have supported students who are trying to make those decisions, docs that are in situations where they're not feeling like their practice is their truest expression. And then more recently, doctors who are ready to make a change, but aren't really sure of, you know, they're in a practice model and they want to make a change, but they're not sure exactly how to do it. So it's kind of all of those things that have created the need for more community connection than I think we've ever had before in our profession.
Yeah. And it, there, certainly a couple things I heard in that being catalysts for change. We can see what's gone on as a catalyst for change, for sure. And I see a lot of people figuring, you know, reevaluating their direction of their life, and how they want to show up and opportunities to that. And really it's amazing. It's like life is at a crossroads for many people. So it's really great that the things that you are all making available. Let's help people get to know you a little bit more. How did you find yourself into the chiropractic world?
You know, it's, I'm classically one of those. I think chiropractic landed in my life in exactly the right moment in time. You know, there's the longer version and then there's the shorter version. For me, chiropractic philosophy, like my mom was a nurse. My personal life, in, you know, my late teens was spent, surrounded in a medical model of intervention. And, when I found myself, you know, expressing symptoms, I was looking for somebody that was willing to work with me, not see me as my symptoms. And that's really where, you know, insert chiropractic. And, you know, I was finishing my master's degree in neuroscience, and it really presented a different model of healthcare that was empowering to the patient. And that's really, like, in that moment in time, that's what attracted me to chiropractic.
That's so exciting. And that's so thrilling. It's really great when people find chiropractic in that context. Yeah. So now, what are the values of, you know, the newest, brightest docs that come out of school these days?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that when I was, you know, running the clinical education, I really got to understand this generation. And it's funny because I relate very deeply personally to their value system in a way that I didn't expect to. And what I know is that they really value experience, both their own personal experience, but the experience for their patients. And they're willing to break outside of the conventional mold of practice in exploring mobile practice, in exploring practicing in different parts of the world, in spending, you know, more time or spending a different, redefining the doctor-patient relationship. And so they don't define success in the financial model that was really part of the, you know, the model that I grew up in chiropractic. Mm-hmm. You know, they're carrying a significant, you know, significantly larger debt load than any of myself or my peers ever carried. And their focus is not about, while they appreciate the need for being financially stable, they ultimately value their life and the experience that they're providing. And so it's a really different way to look at our profession. And what excites me about their value system is that I do believe this is a generation of chiropractors that will serve and have a greater potential of penetrating more of the population because they're going to do this differently than we've seen it done before.
Oh, that's very interesting. I want to ask you something specific about that.
Great.
And then I'm going to say why I'm asking it afterwards, because I think I know what you're going to answer based on that, because that's very inspiring, I got to tell you, because that's been a concern of mine. What do you see in the newest, brightest docs in terms of their values around clinical excellence?
So much of it, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the theme for Mile High this year is about the art.
Right.
And so when we talk about the art, one of the things that, you know, was very familiar to me when I went back into that environment after being in practice for, you know, almost 14 years was that technique as a focus for the student experience still dominates. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the only form of community and growth that I experienced when I was a chiropractor. Being in a room to explore philosophically who I am as a chiropractor, being in a room exploring my core principles as a chiropractor, being able to engage in those kind of conversations was really important. And so what was really interesting to me is when I went back into that environment, the seminar culture was very much focused on technique application. And we're, you know, while there are some that are really incorporating the three-legged stool piece, the science, the art, and the philosophy, students in their earlier years are still really focused on the application. And what ends up happening is that it actually becomes kind of confusing for them throughout the whole process, because while they may be able to perform an adjustment, they really struggle with what does that look like in a practice model of assessment? What does that look like as far as trying to integrate my own philosophy? So when I talk about expressing yourself authentically, you and I both know that the more congruent we are in the way we educate our patients, the more congruent we are in the experience we provide, there's incredible power in that space. And so, you know, when I talk about that authentic expression, what I taught, when I say, you know, I'm super excited about what this generation of chiropractors is going to do, they're willing to do the work to get to the place to explore who they are, and less accepting of the rigid mold that we were all told we were supposed to practice in.
Right. I get it. Now I want to tell you why I asked that, because I know you're going to add on to this. Which is, there was something that my dad told me. I've heard him say a couple times, Donnie Epstein, which was this, and you'll appreciate this a lot. He said he was really driven by clinical excellence initially, early days, practice, and just being clinically excellent in the application. He was an upper cervical practitioner. And he said that there was a place where the profession took a turn and like people did not care about that. That they all, they cared about the money and what was the new gadget or thing that would make them wealthy. And what was the shiny object to bring new people in the door or to sell or put a machine to put a person on, that would, there was a complete shift or focus to that. And when you, with what you just said about new graduates, I didn't hear that. I heard more of like, ooh, this might be a nice shift, which I think the profession needs, a shift more towards our roots, values, and towards excellence in the art. That's what we're focusing on now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've that's definitely what my focus was on. And it was, it, you know, when I was in an institution, was what makes clinical excellence? Like, what are the, you know, when you talk about filling the cup and, you know, reaching that place where we're working, not just from our head, but we're actually tapped into our intuitive wisdom. We're learning about our actual gifts, because, you know, I remember what that was like to realize how much of a, a kinesthetic, you know, doctor I am. It was a learned thing initially. And so we have to start sort of with a, what are the constructs that, you know, create a model that we then bring our own gifts. And that ultimately, you know, there's the idea that clinical excellence is, you know, a fixed plateau. And you and I both know that just like we talk to patients about their healing process, we as doctors experience incredible growth. And then we get to hang in that space and we learn from our patients and we learn more about that exchange. And then we grow and then our practice changes and shifts and grows. And I think that there's been a real lack of that conversation or place for that conversation to be had with experienced docs who then experience themselves and their own journey as the doctor, and they don't have a place to go to have that conversation about where they are clinically expressing and how do they challenge themselves in that space to just continue to grow, improve, you know, and shift the practice in the manner with which they're growing. You know, it's, we've lost that place where there's a shared space for wisdom, where there's, you know, where clinical excellence is not a fixed thing. It's not like you just get there and then you're done, you know?
Oh, no, I mean, I feel exciting stuff. 20 something years in practice of taking care of people, and, you know, and I feel like I'm growing still. I learn new things, new patients all the time. So it's not like you get there. you know?
And that's the missing, I think sometimes, Danny, that I think that that's a missing concept for doctors. And that, so what they think is they get out and they have the degree and they confuse the degree with the education, but then also they just, they confuse the education and the journey. I mean, their practice should be reflective of themselves and their growth as much as they create the experience for the patient. It's really the dynamic between the doctor and patient that creates that space where they grow, where patients heal, and where clinical excellence resides, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I want to preface this next question with something you're going to smile about, which is my wife, Rochelle, just was just at Sherman College. And so she was attending graduation as a board member. And she called me from there right after graduation, like glowing and energetic and like smile, like you could feel the smile through the phone. Yeah. And she said, it was so different than when we were in school, Danny. She said, I've got to tell you, by my I literally think there were 70% female graduates in this. And every one who won an award during the graduation was recipient of some kind of honor was female in this graduation. And she was just so, because she said when, you know, when we went to school, it was 80-20 male, female at Sherman at that time, back in the ancient days. But I've heard you talk about bringing more feminine expression into the profession. What does that mean to you?
No, it's a number of months ago, I was I was running a little book club and we read Molecules of Emotion. And I was reminded, Candace Pert reminded me of something that was really important, which she said, you know, she was referring to science. And for me, you know, that's chiropractic. And she said, you know, in its truest essence, chiropractic for me is feminine. It's incredibly nurturing. It's incredibly intuitive. It's in its rawest, purest beauty, it's feminine. Mm-hmm. And it's been so dominant in its politics. It's been so dominant in its application that it's in a, you know, and I try to, you know, sort of keep things as gender neutral, but there's a dominant structure that has taken over for decades within our political environment, within our technique application. And what that's created is a lack of space for the abundance of women who are graduating, because we are the majority. But if you look at the practice statistics, the entire profession should be concerned when they look at how many women we're losing in active practice.
Oh, interesting.
So when you take a look at the actual statistics, I mean, and NBCE, you know, sort of says, here's what our profession actually looks like out there. And, you know, what we're looking at is by the time we have, you know, 40-year-old doctors out there, only one in four is a woman. And so, you know, when I talk about feminine expression, I think we are losing women because the practice and, you know, has most women go in and go, you know what, there's flexibility in hours, you know, I can have a family, I can. And so that default excuse that women leave practice because they're taking care of their families and then it's not easy to come back. That's kind of been the default explanation and why we're losing women. And I actually think it's more than that. You know, in my conversations with young doctors, they're not having respectful environments to go in and practice in their associateships. They're struggling to be referred to as doctor when that's their, you know, their request. They're in environments where they are relegated to doing more administrative tasks as opposed to the doctoring tasks that that they, you know, have the same degree as any other doctor, and they're going into environments where that's not what's being asked of them. And so what I realized is the more I started talking about it, Danny, the more people came out. I mean, I had I was in Calgary in the fall, and I had a doctor who's been out for 25 years who came up to me after and said, keep speaking, because now I know why I struggled so much in my career. Now I have a better understanding, and I wish somebody had this conversation to prepare me to to be all that I am and take that space up as a doctor. And so when I talk about, you know, we need more feminine expression, when I, it's not that we don't need men. It's right. that we need more women feeling more comfortable in our profession, seeing more of us on the stage, more of us in, you know, different practice models. And that's really what I'm referring to.
Yeah. And no, and I agree. It's been, it's very much been a male dominating profession. And mm-hmm. also even in, not that there's something wrong with being male or masculine,
no.
but it's been that. And even if you see that in the world of technique, putting together, I'll tell you, putting together, it became more in my face and putting together this year's Mile High. Cause I had in my heart that I was going to focus us on the art. I felt like, you know, people need us to be really delivering the goods to our best right now with what's going on in the world. And what I see people do relative to the art isn't always honoring, isn't always analysis. It really isn't necessarily honoring the divine feminine people. And I said, this would be good to bring to, as a focus of the program, people go to philosophy programs all the time, but have they really actually ever done an, I can't think of an art program that I've been to. I said, this will be really exciting. So it really filled me. And then I realized I was putting together and looking for who are the masters, the leaders of different things in art and technique. And it was, I was like, wow, this is even more masculine, out of balance or dominated than the profession as a whole. It was, it was something I did not realize in that area.
So it really is.
Put it together.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when I was at a chiropractic college, things like small-framed women didn't have proper pelvic benches to work off of.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, one of the things that I did was have elevating platforms that could be slid underneath the pelvic benches and pulled out, you know, and so, yeah, like that aspect of, you know, force application. We're not taught as women to use force in that way. And we need to actually have venues to talk about how that feels. And it's great for the women that relate to force in that way and that can easily adopt those kind of strategies. But you tend to find women who want to learn. And I think a lot of what's happening, Danny, is that they're not happening in big rooms. You know, they're happening in small rooms. They're happening in small groups. You know, there's a doc out of Berkeley that, you know, runs seminars and it's 6 to 8 people. You know, there's another doc in and around that's quite well known throughout one of the communities where they accept interns and it's a woman who mentors a small group of other women. And so I think that those rooms are happening. They're not happening in big rooms and big stages because the conversations need to be different and personal. And it feels like an exceptional vulnerability for a lot of students who are really struggling with the conversation of force, let alone the application of it, you know? And so, you know, I don't even know if there's ever been a true investigation of, are more women drawn to tonal work? Mm-hmm. I don't know that for sure. I know that within some systems, I mean, one of my mentors was Sue Brown, and watching Sue come into a room, she intellectually appealed to me in terms of how she talked about the waveform. The application gave room for me to be creative. The emphasis was on assessment and the application was my choice. Those were all principles that really informed who I became as a chiropractor that I find myself, you know, 20 years later, bringing back into the conversation because it's missing out of that that struggle, vulnerable space for a lot of doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, it's very important. Very important. So, you know, I will tell you, actually, I think it, with that, with Mile High, I think we're going to end up with a higher percentage of female speakers on the art, than masculine.
Perfect.
It's been a very interesting thing, you know, putting that together. So talking about that, the art of chiropractic, what excites you or thrills you or energizes you about the art of chiropractic?
I would answer it this way. I love being on a table with a doctor and helping them figure out the way they express who they are as a chiropractor. That's probably one of the most exciting things that I get to do. And so it's not just the application. It's about the assessment. It's about, you know, is the way and the manner with which you are, you know, when somebody presents themselves on your table, do you have a formatted way that you work? Do you have a level of conversation? Do you collect objective information? You know, are you using technology to actually integrate into care? And are you picking and choosing, you know, it's, are the care, you know, I used to say this, and I used to say, the magic of chiropractic doesn't happen in the adjustment. It happens in the care of the patient. And what I mean in that is it's what you do from visit to visit that builds, that creates that healing environment. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes, like for me, that is the art of who we are as chiropractors. It's not just the assessment in the moment. It's who is all that that patient is. How do they express themselves? What is actually the tone of their nervous system? What words do they give their process of expression as they relate to their body or not, or their healing or not? It's in all of those pieces that the art really resides for me.
Right. I love it. And here's the thing, you know, people can learn a bunch of adjustment moves, whether they be high velocity or gentle touch or a series of contacts, so they can learn all that. Yep. But that doesn't equate to caring for the practice member. It doesn't equate for their healing journey and seeing them connect, evolve, have greater clarity. There's more to it than that. And I think so often it's event and process thinking. I think that also event and process thinking can be also a masculine, feminine way of thinking as well. You know, people think of subluxation as an event rather than a process that has happened in this person's body through their life. And the adjustment as an event, you line up this way and you do posiology and then you, you know, thrust and then the adjustment happened. It was this event versus it's a process that happens. And, you know, a process thinking, correct me if you see differently, is a lot more feminine than masculine. Masculine thinking tends to be more event, fix it, you know, thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. It's exactly that. It is a process. That is what care is about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is we can perform an adjustment, but we are responsible for giving the place for that body to know what to do with it, if you know what I mean. It's sort of like that is the art. It's, you know, Sue would always talk about the waveform, and it's like if you don't know where that wave is going to hit, then you put force in, and there, it's constructive or destructive. Our job is to create the opportunity for it to be constructive.
Right.
And that is the process. The adjustment continues to happen when somebody leaves our office. The healing continues to happen when somebody leaves our office. And yeah, I think that that absolutely is a feminine. It takes time. It has that that gentleness. And also, you know, I want to be really clear, like sometimes when we talk about feminine expression, you know, people perceive it as being, you know, anti-male or and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, the fact that we all have both yin and yang, and it's about where is that balance and how do I express myself in the truest, you know, most authentic way. And it's about finding that space and that voice and finding your power in your gifts. And that is the process. That is the art of who we are as chiropractors.
Well, and how do both collaborate?
100%.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so in that, there's been old models of practice and newer models of practice. What do you see in the future in models, new models of practice, and what actually is the old models of practice that are going away?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the easiest way for those like you and I that are very familiar with the way practice management started to define what it is that we do, it was, you know, we have to focus on new patient acquisition. We need to, you know, transition them into the next phase of care. And we need to constantly be, you know, doing our dinners with the docs and lunches and learns and those kind of, you know, scenarios. And, you know, I always say there's different levels and categories of patients, and we want to position ourselves as an expert. And while the one-on-one in our office is part of what we do, it's not the entire essence of all that we have to offer through chiropractic. And so, you know, the old model did not, you know, we want to be high touch and high tech. We want to use platforms and venues to communicate and track what's happening objectively in our patients. I think that the new model includes telehealth. I think that, you know, that's a little offensive, you know, to the old model to think about what that looks like. I think that screening our new patients without masks in the comfort of their home already has them in a place of trust. I think that we should be positioning ourselves in online education, offering coursework to our patients. I think that that can, you know, depending on who we take care of and what phase of healing our patients are in and what we're most passionate about, you know, I think the new model is recognizing not just where our interests are as chiropractors, but where is our skill set that we can most continue that process of healing for our patient base. I think that the last 18 months showed a lot of docs, you know, when high volume was threatened, when their offices just being open were threatened, how do you continue to be there as the go-to person for your practice members when your doors are closed? And so I see the new model of practice being more mobile. I see it more accessible online. I see it as positioning ourselves as the experts that we are when it comes to health education. We know, and we're seeing more and more through research, the benefit of group education. It's, you know, it has 6 new billing codes over the last 18 months. You know, I think that we need to be with the times where people are willing to access their healthcare practitioner of choice in the comfort of their own home, in addition to, and this is not an exchange for what happens in our office on our table, but in addition to. And so, you know, that's my long-winded answer, but I'll tell you, when I see docs looking to make ends meet with a side hustle, our side hustle should be within our scope of practice. Our side hustle should be positioning ourselves as the expert. Our side hustle should be being there for our patients, whether they're in our office for that visit or not. So that for me is the new model of practice. And you know, when people are, they, you know, the vast majority of people are tracking some biomarker on their phone. We have the capacity to engage in a conversation about what's happening with heart rate variability, as an example, or that is 100% congruent with who we are as chiropractors when it comes to healing. And so for me, that's the new model. And our newest younger docs are docs that are wanting to change their practice model. That's who's reaching out to me. And probably some of the surprise was when I talk about the old model and say, look, you know, you're not going to get people into your office to do a lunch and learn. You know, the times of having, you know, your educational class real time in a room with, you know, packing a room of 50 people is challenged right now. So let's do it differently. And it's definitely experienced doc that go, okay, I need some help with the tech. I need to see what that possibility could look like for me. So That's the new stuff that excites me.
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you, you and Dr. Mo and myself, we have a lot of very similar mentors that told us that, Hey, the adjustment in itself without the philosophy, is just going to be seen as another therapy. And 100%. So that educational portion that we can put the context of health in our context and paradigm based on the concepts of that are congruent with the triune of life and what we do is a calling for more from us.
Yep.
And for help people to know that's more possible for them. Right. And that's something inspiring. I, you know, I'll tell you, I will say that I had the honor of practicing through this. And it was challenging and it was tough. And I know many will say that it wasn't all roses. It wasn't all joy and ease. It was tough and it was hard and it was work and it was really rewarding and really spiritually rewarding. And the people that just came, like how much they appreciated and valued care. Yes. It may have been working harder and differently, but it was so touching for people really need you in ways that they had not expressed before as often.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, I mean, you know, anybody that's followed, some of the work that Dr. Mo and I have done, it's the reason we're having a conversation about trauma. It's the reason we're talking about the cellular memory and what that means. It's the reason we're having a conversation about what is polyvagal and how does that relate to who we are as chiropractors philosophically, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we've realized is that all childhood experiences up until this point is what created or didn't the resilience and the adaptability that allowed us to see the brilliance in what has happened in the last 18 months, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to have a dialogue to relate to where people are at, to relate to their nervous systems in a manner with which it honors them and it provides them with an opportunity to adapt to something that none of us have experienced before has been incredibly rewarding, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's in that vein that we definitely are hearing more and more docs wanting to have more of a conversation with their patients about what happens when all that they are and who they were as a child and the things that made sense as far as how they dealt with stress as a child, no longer, they're trying to use those strategies that no longer serve them as an adult. And so in this really special space and the work that you do and, you know, in the languaging that we use, meeting somebody where they're at in their phase of healing, recognizing that how their nervous system is responding, do they have the strategies to allow them to fully heal? And I think that that's actually been some of the most exciting space that those of us that have that conversation with our patients have seen this incredible reward, right?
Yeah. And it's been very profound. It's been very profound. So we are thrilled to have you at Raiders of the Lost Art. It is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great to be in community discussing what we focus on, the art of chiropractic in a congruent, coherent way. I think it's going to be something very special through what we've come through as a world community, as a chiropractic community. So
I also wanted to say to you and Rochelle, you know, when you said that, you know, half of the stage is most likely going to be women having a conversation about art, what I know for certain is that's a conscious decision that you've made. And I commend you for that, Danny, because it's really unsettling when you watch more, you know, sort of it's events and publicity and, you know, Instagram feeds that are inherently disrespectful to over half of the population. And so you are an example. It's, you know, I was told, you know, there just isn't enough women that want to speak on a stage, and you're proving that you're proving that wrong. And what you're doing and the conscious effort that you're making will make a huge difference for those that need to see themselves in that on that stage.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that. And myself and Rochelle, you know, I'm married to an incredible chiropractor, and mm-hmm. I have a mom who's a great chiropractor. And so they've raised me well.
Absolutely. We are all, look, that conscious decision is about, you know, that word feminism, but we all have that space to make room for people that aren't like us, right?
Right,
and the more that we acknowledge the diversity within our profession, the more we actually break out of that mold. And that's exciting. And you're doing it. And so thank you for that.
And I appreciate you saying that. And it is conscious intention. And it's not always effortless, though I'd like it to
no.
be.
No, it's totally not. It's and, totally
and
not.
I also want to say, both you and Dr. Mo, really having the focus of bringing the neuro back into chiropractic, thankfully, and also bringing authenticity to practice, because there's been a lot of, you know, lack of authenticity in the profession, not showing up authentically.
Yeah, and then it shows up, you know, it's sort of like there's a subsection that just wants to use their head, and there's another section that just wants to actually, you know, play around with tone. And there is a space in between, which is right. really, truly where the art is being able to meld both our thinking and our feeling and our intuitive space, because that's the magic. That's
and I
the
think
magic.
It's going to be an incredible time together. So I really hope you enjoy Costa Rica, and I look forward to seeing you on higher ground. I've got
I
to tell
wait.
People to, you know, really check out the Prana Foundation and things
Thank
you're doing.
You.
By the way, while we're on this, any last thing you want to say about how people connect to the Prana Foundation?
Yeah, I mean, we have a private Facebook group, and that's probably the first place to go if you're wondering who we are and what we do. We always sort of drop whatever programs we have, but it's really within community of like-minded people. And what's really happened, Danny, is it's really become global. And that's really exciting for Dr. Mo and I. So we have, you know, and are continually building a community of like-minded chiropractors from all over the world. And so that's the place to come and meet us first.
Exciting, exciting. We will put all those links and other links along with this podcast. So
you.
If you're driving, don't write things down. You know, don't cause any subluxations listening to this. But we'll have that in the notes, and you can get those that goes along. And we look forward to seeing everybody at Mile High. Join us on Higher Ground, uplifting the art as a focus. Time to do that. Get all the details, riseuptomilehigh.com. And how much fun will it could be also all in Raiders of the Lost Art garb. It's going to be fun. So thank you so much for all that you do for chiropractic. I really appreciate both of you so much. And
thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And we'll see you all on Higher Ground, riseuptomilehigh.com. We will see you there.